Welcome to her music world.
Добро пожаловать. Chào mừng bạn đến với thế giới
âm nhạc. Witajcie.
Swagat hai aapka.
Benvenuti.
Musiki.
Dobro doshli.
Mabuhay sa mundo ng musika.
A podcast with women from the music industry.
Yeah, hearing his bass lines were like a work of art, and I was just like, oh my god, like goosebumps, right? Like we talked about the goosebump moment. I don't want to, you know, be discouraging, but it is very difficult to be a female in the music industry. Actually, I think it's very difficult to be in the music industry. it's not an easy career path. So stuff like that has happened, and it's kind of like a bummer because it's like, oh, but what about girl power and, like, you know, women coming together and empowerment and things like that? And every other industry, interns get paid. Like, why is it in the music industry that interns are not getting paid? And you know, there's also the whole pay-to-play thing. You can still speak up for yourself and talk for yourself without having an ego. Like, it's not about ego. It's more about, like, self-respect. That's one of the reasons why we're all still here, we're still playing, is being able to play and connect with people on stage and connect with the audience and things like that. I've never been a classical musician, and now I am, like, really in love with classical guitar. For a while there, while I was working for that company, I was sort of immersed in the world of singing, which was, like, really weird and different for me. Like, you can basically, like, just move the sounds around like any way you want, really. Like, it's kind of like sky's the limit. Room for musicians of different minorities and or ethnicities and or different styles. You can take it even broader, like whatever you do in life, like if you take care of yourself, you're just gonna do it better.
Hello. Again, welcome to another episode of Her Music World. This time I have rather spontaneously Caitlin Sly sitting in front of me at my home. She's a bassist, a singer, songwriter, sound artist, and educator from Vancouver, Canada, and currently staying in Berlin as an honorary artist in residence. Hello, Caitlin.
Hi, it's great to be here.
So at the beginning, I usually have casual questions. My first question is, have you ever had one or more goosebump moments in connection with music? And if so, what was that moment?
So I've probably had like 100 or thousands of those moments. I mean, that's part of the reason I'm still doing music is because of those moments. One moment that comes to mind, though, is when I used to live in Los Angeles and I used to attend a lot of concerts there because there's so many amazing musicians and artists living there and amazing concerts there all the time. And one concert I went to see at the Hollywood Bowl, it was for Herbie Hancock's, it was his birthday party concert. So it was like Herbie Hancock, which alone is like mind-blowing. But then he also had all these guests with him on that concert, like Wayne Shorter was there, Zakir Hussain, Pino Palladino was there, Esperanza Spalding was there. There was like many other musicians there that there's so many musicians and they were all like playing together. And, you know, there was like a moment where, you know, like there Herbie, Wayne Shorter, and then like Zakir, the tabla player was playing. And there was also a sitar player. And it was like kind of like a little mind blowing because it was like jazz mixed with like Indian music and, you know, jazz improvisation, like Wayne Shorter improvising on his saxophone and then the sitar player improvising, but like in his style of music. And so like kind of the fusion of those genres together and then, you know, just being at the Hollywood Bowl outside, you know, just witnessing this concert, it was just like, I feel like it was just goosebumps. Yeah. I just feel like my head was exploding. I was like, oh my God, this is too much for me. Like, this is too much amazingness in one concert. So yeah, that was one moment for sure.
And if you really think yourself back in there, do you still sometimes get goosebumps just by thinking of it?
I was getting goosebumps just now thinking yes. about it. Like I was trying to like hold back like my, make sure I still breathe or something while I'm explaining it. Because yeah, like just remembering back to, again, that time and you know, all of the amazing concerts that I used to see there at the Hollywood Bowl and other venues in LA. Yeah, those like kind of warm summer evenings as well where you're outdoors and it's like warm and, you know, you're wearing a t-shirt or whatever and there's palm trees and it's beautiful and yeah, it's just amazing.
Oh, nice. I'm with you there.
Yeah.
Do you have a good mood song that always works? And if so, which one is it?
So, yeah, I don't think I have one particular song. Like, I think it really depends. Yeah, it's more genre-based. And then within genres, I have, like, some songs that I would go to. Like, it kind of depends, like, what I need to change my mood. Like, so, for example, maybe, like, I might even listen to, like, some metal or something to, like, really kind of fire me up and, like...
I get that.
get me, like, stoked. Like, one of the things I love to do usually when I go for runs is I like to listen to metal because it kind of, like, pumps me up and it gets my, like, adrenaline and, like, endorphins going and I come back from my run and I feel like a new person. Mm-hmm. And so maybe at the beginning I was maybe kind of feeling dull or even anxious sometimes or... tired or lethargic or something or stressed. And then I'll go and do that and listen to like a bunch of like heavy tunes and come back like a new person, like feeling kind of invincible or something like that. So that's like one example. But then, you know, it could also be like reggae, for example, like reggae music is always so happy and chill and, you know, like putting that on and like maybe cooking dinner or something and then just feeling the vibes of that and getting into that kind of space can make me really happy too. So it really kind of, I feel like a lot of different genres can do that.
Definitely.
And then, you know, sometimes metal doesn't make me happy. You know what I mean? Like it depends on like what
make
you're
you
doing.
Aggressive.
Yeah. Or it can, it's almost like annoying. It's like, no, like that's too much. Like turn it off, like put something more chill or something. You know what I mean? So.
Well, I can also think of seasonal music. That can make me very aggressive during spring, for example. But yeah, it's true. I've never had an answer like that before. But yeah, that's a very, very nice thing to think about. Have you ever listened to music in your youth where you think in retrospect, what was that phase? Oh dear, that was somewhat embarrassing.
So I don't want to say that it was embarrassing because I know I even have like a lot of friends that still listen to, I went through a phase where I was really into like punk and ska music. Mm-hmm. It was like always going to punk and ska shows and just constantly like, you know, 100% of the time listening to punk and ska. And it really was just like this phase because now like I never listen to punk or ska and like I almost, yeah, like I don't really like it anymore. And it's like, sometimes, like I said, like I have some friends maybe that listen to it. So, I'll, you know, it'll get put on here and there from time to time, usually not by my choice. And yeah, I'm just like, I don't know what it was. Like, it was just like some phase where I really loved it. And now I'm just like really over it. Like, I don't know. Like, I just find it, it is very, it's more simplistic music. Like, especially like punk music.
I was just going to say it's more narrative in a way.
Yeah.
Political.
Political, yeah.
Politically narrative. And I guess it's not so much about the melody and the music.
Yeah, so I think that's maybe part of it.
Could be, right?
Yeah.
Because you're a musician.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have a different ear anyway.
That's true. But then like, for example, something like Johnny Cash is also like very simple and very like, it's more about the lyrics and stuff like that. And I've love Johnny Cash and I, you know, so it's not that I don't like simple music. In fact, sometimes complex music is like too much for me, you know, so it really depends. But for whatever reason, like punk and ska, I've just like never been able to get back into it. So it was just a phase and it's not there anymore.
Yeah. Life.
Yeah.
thank you for sharing. So but now about you as a musician. I'm very impressed when I, you know, I caught attention because there's multiple Facebook groups about musicians in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And then you did this post and you were like, hey, I'm here in Berlin and I'm staying here for a while, for a few weeks. So if you want to meet up to either talk about music or make music or whatever. And I mm-hmm. found that very cool. And I was like, let's see, what is she playing? And then it said, she's a bassist. And I'm like, yes, she's a woman and plays the bass. I want to have her on my podcast. So what is your music love story, I always call it? How did you come to play the bass, or how did you come to be a professional musician?
Right. Okay. So yeah, like I guess I'll start from kind of the beginning, like where when I was a kid, my father was a blues musician. Mm-hmm. So he was gigging and performing around a lot, and I would go to see his gigs and stuff. So even from sort of a young age, I was sort of in that environment. And then eventually he put me in piano lessons, mm-hmm. which I hated. And it always felt like a chore for me. And I just feel like piano didn't seem to suit my personality, where I was very shy as a child, and introverted. Still kind of introverted today too. And so
we need introverted people.
That's true. And so I was like, you know, always being asked to play solos or even to sing sometimes. And these things like terrified me. And I remember my first recital on piano, I was like literally shaking. Mm-hmm. Obviously I've come a long way since then, but mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just like this idea of being in the spotlight I didn't enjoy. And I wanted to, not only that, but I wanted to feel more like in the foundation of the music. Like I always felt like the piano was just sort of this extra thing on top. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like in the foundation. And I didn't realize at the time, but that's exactly what the bass is. I ended up, reaching a point where I was like, I can't do piano anymore. I have to either quit or pick something else. Mm-hmm. And so it was a choice between bass guitar, drums, and I ended up gravitating to the bass because my piano teacher was also a bass player, and so it was an easy transition to just switch from piano to bass and continue with the same teacher. And she was also a female bass player as well, so that was kind of a source of inspiration. And then shortly after I switched to bass, I ended up wanting to audition to play in like this Motown band. Mm-hmm. And I got the gig because I think, you know, playing piano for so many years, it was very easy for me to switch to bass because I was already able to read bass clef. Mm-hmm. I was already like musical, right? And so it was a quick transition. I was able to quickly kind of pick it up and audition and get into this band. And then that was when I really sort of fell in love with music, because mm-hmm. Learning about that whole music scene, Motown, and the musicians behind the music and the artists. My favorite bass player till this day is James Jamerson, who mm-hmm. played on all the Motown recordings. And just, yeah, hearing his bass lines were like a work of art. And mm-hmm. I was just like, oh my God, like goosebumps, right? Like mm-hmm. we talked about the goosebump yes. moment. And his bass lines are so incredible. And he's influenced so many other bass players since. Like you can hear his style and so many other bass players playing like today. And John Paul Jones, for example, in Led Zeppelin was like heavily influenced by him. And virtually every bass player, electric bass player, has probably been influenced by him, including myself. So yeah, that was really kind of where I fell in love with music. And I mm-hmm. was like, oh my God, like I want to do this, for the rest of my life kind of thing.
So you basically went into my next question about your role models. So those two men that you talked about, or this one man?
Yeah, James Jamerson.
James Jamerson.
Yeah.
James Jamerson?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a bit of a tongue twister.
Yes, it is. he's one of your role models.
Yes.
Is he the role model for you, or do you have any female role model as a bass player?
I do, yeah. He's probably the role model, like my number one. Mm-hmm. I'm also a huge fan of Pino Palladino. Mm-hmm. I actually named my dog Pino after Pino Palladino. That's how much I like him. Esperanza Spalding is probably like my favorite female bass player. She's just so incredible, and singer too, like just on both of those instruments, vocals and bass, she is just phenomenal.
You know, as you were talking about how you listened to music when you were jogging, mm-hmm. I was thinking about during the pandemic, I went on a walk down the river here. And it always took me about an hour, 1.5 hours, almost every day. And there was this phase where I listened to her music like daily, on a daily basis. So when you talked about metal, listening to metal, I went back to that situation when I listened to Esperanza Spalding and her music. Yeah, interesting. But yeah, she's great.
She's incredible.
Yeah. What's your experience from a female perspective in the music industry so far? Would you say, since you have such a long background and you had the luck to have a father that's active in the music scene, would you say you share a different experience than maybe other female musicians in the industry?
I'm not sure. Like I think yes and no. Mm-hmm. Like I think I don't want to, you know, be discouraging, but it is very difficult to be a female in the music industry. Actually, I think it's very difficult to be in the music industry. it's not an easy career path. And then on top of that, being female, like you know, to this day, like there's always been hurdles, like extra hurdles, I feel, to overcome as a female. Like for example, in that Motown band I spoke about, I often got like overshadowed by other bass players in that band, like, mm-hmm. and kind of shoved off the stage, like almost literally by male bass players that
wow.
kind of wanted to take over and things like that. And, you know, so things like that. The other thing that has been really interesting is losing out on a lot of opportunities working with other female musicians because they don't want to get their sort of limelight's taken by another female.
Mm-hmm.
So mainly like female singers or artists. Like there was one in particular in LA where I was working for her and her manager didn't want me on the gig because they didn't want another female overshadowing her as the, you know, the main focal point of the,
yeah.
the band. So stuff like that has happened. And it's kind of like a bummer because it's like, oh, but what about girl power and like, you know, mm-hmm. women coming together and empowerment and things like that. And I've had those experiences too, where, you know, getting together with other women and playing with other women has been amazing. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, so when those situations happen and, you know, and it's like allowed,
mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And I wish, you know, that more of those times would happen. And, instead of the other way around where it's almost like they want to separate the females.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of different hurdles like that have happened over the years. And then, of course, the music industry itself is I don't know, what's the word? Like notorious for, you know, being difficult and, you know, musicians not getting paid well or treated yeah. fairly and yada, yada, yada. So that is all there as well. And
is that why you have also spread your work? Because you're also an author of like bass education books, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I mean, I did spread my work because I realized, like when I was in Los Angeles, actually, that there's two reasons for that. One is that I realized I don't want to have to only rely on playing bass,
mm-hmm.
because that's hard. And then, you know, you have to start, you have to basically take any gig in order to just make ends meet.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to have to do that because there's some gigs that I didn't want to take. Like,
yeah.
you know, a lot of people think that, you know, on the flip side, that being a musician is easy and maybe fun, but it's a really hard job and it's a lot of work. And so,
like sports.
Yeah. And so like, I just, you know, like I didn't want to have to rely on that like 24/7. And
also it's late night. Right?
Late night, yeah, for sure. And like the other reason that I wanted to kind of diversify is just because I have a lot of interests. Like I am a very, I would say, like dynamic and multifaceted person.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been that way. And so I was just like, oh, I'm interested in other areas and I want to like explore this and I want to explore that. And I don't want to just only be in this one silo. Like I want to just explore as much as I can. Like, you know, that's even why part of why I'm here in Berlin. Like I want to explore the world and explore other cultures and countries and just absorb as much as I can, I guess, while I'm here. So.
And now that's very interesting for me, since you say you are such an introvert. And how did you cope personally with the hurdles within the music industry, like being pushed off, but almost being pushed off stage mm-hmm. When you were playing in the Motown band?
So I guess I coped by mainly just keeping quiet and internalizing these things mm-hmm. and just kind of following along. It wasn't until like I became older and more confident and like outspoken that I started to, you know, talk back or, you know, take back what was mine or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, you know, most of the time I was sort of like that, like growing up. Yeah, just sort of like stepping aside, I guess. Mm-hmm. Even though it wasn't what I wanted to do, but I just kind of was put in my place, I guess, mm-hmm. and which is, I guess, what women are supposed to do, quote unquote. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but now, yeah, now I don't have a lot of tolerance for things like that anymore, probably because of what I went through. And then just also seeing, yeah, like it still happens all the time in the music industry, like not just with women, like even I was just talking to someone earlier about, you know, the whole intern thing in the studio world and how interns are like not paid anything. And like, I just find that like absolutely ridiculous. Like you can't even give them lunch, like what, like nothing, like, and that, you know, some of them are working like full-time or nearly full-time hours and they're not getting paid anything. And like, they have to like, quote unquote, pay their dues. And it's like, you know, every other industry interns get paid. Like, why is it in the music industry that interns are not getting paid? And, you know, there's also the whole pay to play thing.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's here in Germany, but I definitely played some gigs in Los Angeles where they were pay to play gigs. And it's just like bizarre sometimes the standards in the music industry. It's just like really backwards, a lot of things.
So if someone young listens and they're just getting into the scene, what kind of instruments do you have now as you're older, more experienced in the music industry? What have you found works best for you if you, for example, feel yourself you are in a position where you're not treated respectfully?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you just have to stand up for yourself and, you know, do it in such a way that you're not like aggressive or mm-hmm. mean. And, you know, there's also the whole ego thing in the music industry. A lot of people have egos and, you know, so in that sense, like you can still speak up for yourself and talk for yourself without having an ego. Like, it's not about ego. It's more about like self-respect and, you know, self-worth and, you know, doing what you know you deserve.
Mm-hmm.
And usually like those conversations go okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can usually, you know, hopefully if the people that you're working with are also nice people,
mm-hmm.
then you can have those conversations and kind of hash it out. And sometimes, yeah, sometimes they don't go okay. And then in those instances, like you just have to, move on. And, you know, like, again, this is about standing up for yourself and about what you're worth. So it's more important to do that, in my opinion, than mm-hmm. to do things that undermine your worth, basically. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to let go of, again, this is my opinion. Other people don't do this.
I've asked.
Yeah, but other opinion. People would not do this. But I feel that you sometimes have to let go of certain opportunities because of that in order to just, take care of yourself, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And have your dreams or aspirations in the music industry changed in the course of the years? And if yes, why?
They definitely have evolved quite a bit. Like, you know, when I was younger and, you know, I moved to Los Angeles from Canada. And, you know, at that time, my aspiration was to basically be a session musician. Mm-hmm. That's why I went there. And, you know, I am a session musician now. But I, you know, when I was there, I started to develop new dreams and aspirations. Oh. And that's when I started to become more interested in other areas, such as music technology and sort of audio and things like that. And, you know, that's kind of led me to really being here today, pursuing my master's in music technology and learning about all of that is really what sparked this whole tangent that I'm on with spatial audio and composing with sound and art, creating sound art and things like that. And so that was, you know, never something that was there in the beginning. And a lot of these things just sort of happened like naturally. Like, for example, writing the books was also I never had aspirations to write a book. it just sort of fell into my lap. And it was actually a colleague of mine from music school in LA. He contacted me one day to write these books. And so it was like completely out of the blue, like nothing that I ever anticipated doing. So a lot of opportunities just kind of like appeared in front of me like that. Like I also helped develop the bass curriculum for Fender Play, which is another online music platform for learning mm-hmm. music. And that was another opportunity that, you know, I never had any intention of doing. I didn't apply mm-hmm. for that or anything. It was like I got a call one day and it was like, do you want to do this thing? So yeah, that's the interesting thing of how things work. And another example is songwriting and singing and songwriting also kind of happened by accident. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned when I was younger, I never really liked singing. Mm-hmm. And I got to a point when I was just like so fed up with playing in bands that I was like, you know what? I quit playing in bands. Like, I don't want to do it anymore. So I need a break. And little did I know that I didn't really quit. I just sort of opened another doorway for myself, which is that, you know, now I'm sitting at home, you know, with no gigs to play. So I started writing songs. Like I still had that, music energy in me that I needed to get out somehow. So I started doing that by songwriting and I just, you know, started almost being prolific with that, like just pumping out songs like all the time, different ideas. Like, you know, I have like this huge backlog of material still that I need to record. I mean, it's probably like any songwriter, right? Like you have all these, the amount of voice memos that I have on my phone of just like random song ideas is like ridiculous. But so again, it was like something that happened that I didn't really anticipate that was going to happen. And then it also, got me back into singing because, of course, you know, a song needs, well, it doesn't always need, but in my case, I wanted my songs to have a melody and I wanted them to have lyrics. So I had to basically learn how to do that because I never really wrote lyrics before and I never really, you know, considered myself a lyricist. And I actually thought I was horrible at writing lyrics at the outset. And so I had to spend a lot of time kind of, yeah, just learning how to do that. And so I just, you know, I always focus so much on the bass when I would listen to music. Obviously, my ear would naturally gravitate to that. But when I started getting into songwriting, I had to like shift my attention to the lyrics and mm-hmm. not just the lyrics, but the whole song, really. Yeah. Like, what is going on with the rest of this song? And just to study that and study the lyrics. Like, I found myself looking up lyrics a lot for songs and I never used to do that. You know, a lot of people, you talk to them and they don't even listen to the lyrics in music. A lot of people just listen to the music and they're almost like...
It's interesting. I've always been the other way around.
Well, you're a vocalist.
I am always... Yeah. Yeah. Is it that? I don't know. For me, it's like I listen to the music, of course, too. I also listen to sometimes electronic music and there's rarely any lyrics in there, you know? But it's so interesting, even when I was younger and I wasn't speaking English very well yet, I still read into the lyrics, because back then when you had a CD, you had the booklet. And when you were lucky, you had the lyrics in there as well to the songs. And I tried to understand. And then usually the whole song grew in quality, like for my experience, for my whole experience, because I know what they're talking or singing about.
Totally.
And so, yeah, that's how I always listen to music. And it's very interesting in comparison, like what you say, you know, when people say, I don't know what they're singing, I was never interested. And I'm like, what?
Well, there's a lot of people that do that, including myself, until I, you know, decided one day to start paying attention to the lyrics. And then I realized how much I was missing. And exactly what you said, that the experience is that much more full and amazing when you you actually know what they're singing about, and you know, moving to just, you know, because music itself is very moving. Like it's again, like without even knowing really what they're singing. For example, if you're listening to music in a different language that you don't know, you can still get moved by that music. You have no idea what they're singing, because it's music is still somehow like a language that you can understand. But then on top of that, like when you learn about the lyrics, it's like, oh my God, there's just like a whole other layer of like, it's just amazing. And I don't know why, like I'm so glad that I decided to quit playing in bands because I just went off on this tangent, and I'm really glad that I did.
So many keywords to my questions that are going to come up now. But let's go first into, because you stopped playing as a session musician, and you already mentioned one thing, but I had the question about what is your, is there any difference between being a session musician and a musician in a band, in a like a constant project? Or being a solo artist, for example, and do you have a preference? But you actually basically said it already. Well,
yeah, I mean, they're all quite different, but they're all similar in a way as well. And I get like different satisfaction out of all of them. Like definitely, obviously, playing in a band, you get to interact with people on stage, and you get to play on stage with others. And that's something, you know, that is really hard to describe, but also very hard to replace. Like there's nothing else like that experience. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we're all still here. We're still playing, is being able to play and connect with people on stage and connect with the audience and things like that.
Hello, dear listeners. It's me, Zoe, with a little advertisement on my own behalf. So far, this podcast has been completely produced by me from back to front. If you want to support my work, you can find all the information and links in the podcast description. I would like to point out that a podcast lives from the fan community, so please share, like, and love my podcast for all it's worth, or visit my page on SteadyHQ and become a member. Thank you very much in advance for your applause and appreciation. Yours truly, Zoe.
That's an amazing thing to do, and to kind of bond and connect with your bandmates. But then, you know, on the flip side, being like a songwriter or solo artist is like, that is like your opportunity to, it's kind of like your muse, like it's your outlet. Like you can just write about whatever you want. You can, you know, it's what's inside you and what's inside your head. And it's coming out onto paper or onto, you know, audio or whatever. So it's really a wonderful way to express yourself. And I mean, you're expressing yourself in a band too, but it's like a different way of expressing yourself. So, and I mean, these are all ways of expressing yourself, I guess, like even as a session musician, you're still ultimately expressing yourself when you play, whatever you play for whoever the artist is, but that is more about, it is still about kind of connecting with people, because you're trying to connect with the artist and you're trying to understand like what their goal is and what their, you know, who they are and what their song is about. And you're trying to, you know, find a way to help them communicate that as well. You're trying to add your piece to help them with that. So that's also a really cool and exciting process.
And did you still, till today, stop being a session musician?
No, I'm still a session musician. I play for quite a few other artists back mm-hmm. in Canada, and mm-hmm. It's really fun actually.
So you took a pause, but then you came back to it.
Well, yeah, I took a pause from playing in bands. So okay. like, kind of, it's a little different. As a session musician, you're not like you're being hired to play for people, mm-hmm. whereas like being in a band is like you are committed to being in that project, and you kind of it's a bigger commitment, okay. I guess, because you know you have to. But a lot more.
It's a long-term relationship.
Yeah, exactly. It is very much like that, actually. And a session musician is kind of nice, actually, in that sense, because there's not a lot of commitment. It's just like
dating. You
know, yeah, it's like I need bass for this thing. Like, can you do it? Yes. Okay. Here's some money. Thank you. Goodbye. Like that's it.
Well, that's cool. With all those things that you have experienced now, and would you have done anything differently in hindsight?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Well, okay, one thing I will say is that I wish I had kept up with the piano. I kind of dropped it cold turkey for the bass, because now in hindsight, I wish I had kept it up, because some of my favorite musicians are pianists, and piano is actually such a lovely instrument and such a useful instrument to know. Like, it's so useful for so many applications, including songwriting and
true.
teaching and different things like that. So it's just a great instrument to know. And, you know, I do still know piano. I can still play piano. But if I had kept it up at the sort of level and commitment level that I had been doing it when I was younger, it would have been a good thing to do, probably.
Don't you play the guitar?
I play guitar as well. And that's kind of another thing that almost I regret, because for so long, I almost kind of like boycotted the guitar. Like, I was kind of like, oh, the stupid guitar. Like, I don't want to, like, these guitar players.
It has six strings.
Yeah.
I like my four.
And like, again, it's that instrument that is like, you know, you're taking solos, and it was just not my vibe, you know? Like, there's a lot of that kind of thing going on. So sure. As a bass player, I was like, no guitar. But then, yeah, as I got older, like, and started to appreciate different styles of music, actually, I mainly played classical guitar, mm-hmm. which is quite interesting, considering that, like, I've never been a classical musician. Mm-hmm. And now I am, like, really in love with classical guitar. And you know, flamenco guitar and fingerstyle, mainly guitar playing, is what I really gravitate to.
Mm-hmm. Also, but with the rhythmical aspects to it, like where you use the whole corpus of the guitar. I don't know. There's like this style where you play the guitar, where you can flip your fingers on the body of the guitar and do that. Do you do that too?
I haven't done that yet, or... I have definitely used guitar and other instruments in very unconventional ways, but mm-hmm. that's more to do with the sound art and mm-hmm. Sound design type stuff, because mm-hmm. As an instrumentalist, I always looking for, like, I will always find a way to play something, like, you know, this teacup here, I will probably use it for some sampling and recording of something. It's just fun to play around with things in unconventional ways and try to come up with interesting sounds and ways to use those sounds in your music or what have you. So the guitar, if I had not boycotted it for so many years and had, if I had been able to find my niche in guitar earlier, mm-hmm. That would have also been good, because, you know, I would have been playing guitar for more years. There's so many things like that I can say that I quote unquote regret, but at the same time, it's kind of like, this has been like my path, and there's been good things and bad things. Like, another thing that happened to me was I went to Montreal in Canada to study at McGill University music. And I was there for a very short time before I ended up coming back home because my family had some health problems. So I came back and, you know, I never ended up finishing that studies at McGill. And so, you know, I can say that, you know, I could have done that differently or whatever. But then at the same time, it's like, well, my family is really important to me. And it actually put me on a different path. Like, you know, everything kind of happens for a reason almost. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel that way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just like everything that's happened has happened, you know, has brought me to where I am today. And all these different random experiences that I've told you about wouldn't have happened if I didn't do what I did. So mm-hmm. yeah.
True. So was that, since it seems like everything is in the flow in a way and things happen because, I don't know, some things end and then a new door opens. And you mentioned earlier that you didn't really like singing, but then you started to do your own music and you started singing as well. Was that a reason for you to start a podcast that talks about the voice and singing?
It kind of is, yeah, because I was, I actually used to work for a singing education company in mm-hmm. Canada called Singdaptive. And so it was through that company that I originally came up with the podcast idea. And I was just for a while there while I was working for that company, I was sort of immersed in the world of singing, which mm-hmm. was like really weird and different for me. Like, again, it's sort of another opportunity that fell into my lap that I never thought would happen, you know, and it was really amazing because I was able to finally study vocals through the company. I had free vocal lessons. And so I, you know, for so many years I was part of the reason that I was, unconfident as a singer because I didn't have any training as a vocalist, but getting that training was like, hugely, influential in, that process as well, and just feeling more confident and as a vocalist, and just learning about that whole world, which is so different than the world as an instrumentalist.
Mm-hmm. Can you still recall, because I'm a singer myself and during my studies as well, not singing studies but different studies, I did work on the vocals and checked out all kinds of different styles of singing and how people are using their vocal cords and all that kind of stuff. And I find that very interesting, like the mm-hmm. whole history of like singing and all that. Can you still recall, like, let's say, three things that really intrigued you or were a total surprise or an aha moment that you mm-hmm. would like to share? Like, where you're like, ah, really? That's what's happening with the voice? Or, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple guests on my podcast. I had a Mongolian tube and throat singer on my podcast. So just kind of learning how that works. And
did you get to try it out?
I didn't try it, but he gave us like a demo or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, it's so amazing what you can do with the voice, and getting the different harmonics mm-hmm. present. And then, you know, he would do things where he could go like below the fundamental note mm-hmm. and get like really low, deep sounds. And then I also had like a metal singer on my podcast. Mm-hmm. So understanding that too, and like the technique that they use in order to sing or, you
scream.
Know, vocal, I was going to say vocalize safely, because, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't do it properly, I mean, I think, like one of the big takeaways I learned about vocals, and I mean, this really applies to all instruments, but it's having proper technique, really, because, you know, it can be very easy to like damage your voice and, you know, get like nodules and things like this if you don't do things properly, and then, you know, you can't sing anymore. And it always amazes me. Singers who, you know, go on tour and, you know, every day they're singing, and, you know, they must just have such great technique, and like the amount of like dedication to your health and wellness that singers have compared to instrumentalists. Like, again, like it applies to all instruments, but I feel like there's an extra like level to singing that like you really have to be on top of your game. Like if you're, you know, not taking care of your body, because your body is your instrument, mm-hmm. you know, like at the end of the day, like when I'm done playing, I can put my bass away in the case and my instrument. I don't need to like use it anymore. But a singer, like when you're done playing your gig, like you're still using your instrument all the time, like when you're speaking or anything like that. And so, you know, sometimes you see singers that they don't want to talk to you after they're finished playing. And it's like, I will never take offense to that because I understand now that they need to rest their instruments too. And yeah, and just like the amount of dedication required to sing at that level is really inspiring. Mm-hmm. Like at the professional level, there's a singer that I'm really inspired by, actually a female metal singer. Her name, or she's an Arch Enemy.
Mm-hmm.
She's Canadian, actually. And yeah, like, you know, they're constantly on tour and she's screaming mm-hmm. like every day, you know, day in, day out. And she's a vegan and she's like very on top of her health and wellness. She's always like, you know, going to the gym. Even when she's on tour, she brings like her weights and things with her so that she can still keep up with her health. And it's like, I understand that she would need to do that be at the level that she's at of performance. So
that's true. I mean, I always wondered how musicians, professional musicians, can survive. I mean, ultimately they had a heart attack or whatever, but when you have drug issues and alcohol issues, for me it always startled me, like, how can they do that? I mean, how can they survive for so many years
mm-hmm.
having a lifestyle like that?
Yeah,
even as an instrumentalist, I find, because you already mentioned that you're very active.
Yeah,
and I suppose you're also doing that because of you being an instrumentalist, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you can get a lot of injuries. I actually have injuries from playing bass, and you know, it's the same. You know, you can get problems as well. It's not just vocals, and so yeah, like it's important to take care of yourself. And I think, like, you know, like you can take it even broader. Like whatever you do in life, like if you take care of yourself, you're just gonna do it better. You know, so it's important, I think. And there's something else I learned about in when I was working for that company, this term vocal athleticism.
Yeah.
And it really changed my perspective of vocalists and musicians. Like when you're, you know, getting to a certain level of professionalism, you kind of are an athlete. Like that's kind of how you have to treat it. Like,
definitely.
And it's really interesting to make that analogy. Like musicians are a lot like athletes in a way, and the amount of dedication and practice and everything that we do to perform at the level we perform is very similar to the amount of work that an athlete needs to put in to perform at their level too. And so it's really interesting to make that analogy.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. How did you get to, you already mentioned it before regarding keywords that I mentioned, but now you're in Berlin and you're an artist in residence for 4D Sound. And if I understood it right, you're working on your master's. So in sound design, is that right?
So I finished my master's a few years back now.
Okay.
But I guess I sort of started getting into this stuff when I was in my master's. So is the question, how did I get?
Yeah, of course. But I was also wondering if that is a part of your master's, but you already finished that master's in sound design and now you are an artist in residence for 4D Sound. I didn't know what 4D Sound is. It's a studio exploring the medium of spatial sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so why Berlin?
So 4D Sound, there's basically three studios in the world that have this 4D Sound technology. It's actually like a software that you use. So the studio here in Berlin is in the Funk House and it's mm-hmm. called Monom.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one in Budapest called the Spatial Sound Institute. And then there's one in Vancouver
mm-hmm.
called Loeb. And those are the three in the world currently. And so what happened actually was when I finished my master's, I was accepted to do a residency at the Spatial Sound Institute in Budapest.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, the pandemic happened and all travel was cut and, you know, all that type of thing. So my plans to do that were, you know, kind of put on hold. And so I thought, well, you know, while I'm here in Canada and this pandemic is going on, why don't I do this at Loeb in Vancouver because it's local? So I was connected with Loeb and I did a residency there
mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago. And so that was my first introduction to 4D sound and I learned about the technology there. And then
just a question in between is, does 4D refer to 3D? So it's like something on top? Like not a 3D sound, but a 4D sound?
Yeah, like I don't know why they okay. came up with the name, but it's basically like a very, it's just like spatial audio on steroids or something. Like it's just like there are speakers like in the floors and in the ceiling and like along the walls and there's just a lot of speakers and you have the ability to move the sound within the room up and down. Mm-hmm. So vertically, horizontally, like you can move the sounds in and out of the room. Like you can basically like just move the sounds around like any way you want, really. Mm-hmm. Like it's kind of like the sky's the limit.
Nice.
So there's a lot of, there's a lot of opportunity to create a very immersive piece in the space. Because this technology is only available at these three studios and you can only really like, you basically have to be in the space to compose something for it. Because if I, for example, like try to come up with something at home using my, you know, two monitors, it's not going to translate the same when I bring it into the space with like, I think, the people at Monom were saying that they have like 40 speakers or something like that. You know, it's just you have to be there and you have to be in the space so that you can hear how the sound interacts with the space and how it moves through the space and things like that. And so you have to. So that's why I guess they have these residencies so that you can actually spend time there and come up with something.
So what does a day for you working with the speakers look like? You sit inside of this space with the 40 speakers mm-hmm. with like a computer.
Yes.
And then you also record sounds or do you only design them on the computer or do
it can be both, like either mm-hmm. or. Like basically, my first residency at Loeb was my first time using 4D sound, so I didn't really know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, because I had done it already, like I had a good idea of what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So when I came to Berlin, I brought like a lot of sounds with me, like mm-hmm. some samples that I could use right away. Some of them, like you can record yourself and use them, or you can use really anything that you would use to record like a normal piece of music mm-hmm. or any piece of audio, you can use that. So if you want to use a synthesizer, if you wanted to record your vocals or mm-hmm. if you wanted to record an instrument or anything like that, you can do that. And then it's just about like, it's almost like kind of the mixing process that is done in the space where then you get to spatialize it and put it somewhere in the space where you want, and you can move it around if you want, and different things like that. So it's really about composing something for the space itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I could literally just, for example, the songwriting that I do, I could bring a song that I wrote and mm-hmm. I could spatialize it in Monom. But what I'm doing currently is I'm actually making a sort of an underwater soundscape.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just really trying to make it like sort of immersive underwater experience.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, things like that can be really fun to do with the 4D sound. Things where, you know, another person that I saw on Friday when I was there, they were doing sort of a jungle environment. Oh, nice. So yeah, like it's almost like if you were to close your eyes, like you would be in that jungle and you could hear, you know, some birds over here and maybe like some other animal over here. And, you know, and another thing that's really cool, more so at Loeb than the one in Vancouver than at Monome, is they have a vibroacoustic floor.
Mm-hmm.
So the floor can like vibrate and things mm-hmm. like this. So you can create experiences with that as well. You know, like you can make rumbling experiences, or for example, maybe with like thunder mm-hmm. or something. So you can really make that experience more realistic with the floor and things like that. And yeah, actually, like some people who may be like sensitive to sound or things like that, like it might not actually be ideal for them, because it can be like so immersive that maybe it's a little overwhelming for some people.
Yeah.
So yeah, you'd have to be careful if you had any like sensitivities that way. But otherwise, yeah, it's really amazing and interesting to work with and to come up with something in space.
And who's the audience? I mean, is it for galleries? Is it for performance art? Or
yeah, it's so they have for example, in Loeb, I presented my piece to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, at Monome, they also have the option to present to do kind of more like a private presentation at the mm-hmm. end of my residency. But the thing is, like, I don't really know anyone here to present it to. So, I mean, if you want to come and check it out, mm-hmm. you'd probably be my only audience member, unless I...
I'm considering it. I hope I'm there. I mean, I hope I'm actually free that day.
So actually what I hope to do is whatever I compose here in Monome, I want to bring back to Canada and present it at Loeb in Vancouver and kind of build off of it there.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually what happened, going back to my story, the pandemic... When the pandemic restrictions were lifted, the Spatial Sound Institute in mm-hmm. Budapest, which is the one that I was originally supposed to go to, they were no longer doing artist residencies. So I guess the pandemic had changed their situation there. Mm-hmm. And so for the foreseeable future, they were no longer doing residencies. So they basically transferred me to this one.
To Berlin.
Yeah, to Berlin. And I'm actually like... Yeah, like really glad that it worked out that way, because I've always wanted to come to Berlin, and you know, my I actually have some German family.
Mm-hmm.
My stepmother and my stepbrother are German, so yeah, just getting to learn more about the German culture, and I've always heard amazing things about Berlin. And I mean, yeah, certainly since I've been here, I came here on Thursday, and I've just been completely overwhelmed with. The amount of, like, I think this is probably the most artsy city I've ever been. And just the history and all of the galleries and museums and things to do here is like, oh my goodness, like, it's amazing. It's so amazing.
Are you able to work?
Yeah, well, I have set times like every day that I'm working in the studio. And then after I finish work, I try to get in something. Like today I went to see the parliament, and mm-hmm. Yeah, like every day I try to check out something, because I feel like even in the time that I'm here, I won't be able to see everything. So
that's true. It's true. Not even Berliners do that. Yeah. You know, even if they're interested. Even when I die, there will be things that I have not seen here in the city, to probably. Be honest. But that's okay. All right. So coming to the last two questions, is there anything you would like to see a change in within the music industry that are beyond, of course, the most like... normal request to pay musicians and everyone, but is there anything that's very personal to you, or like very important to you, that you would like to see change as well?
Well, certainly some of those things that I spoke about earlier about like the sort of the standards in the industry, you know, paying interns and things like that. But maybe one thing is like you know, like I am a little different as a musician because I'm also an artist, right?
Yeah.
And so I, you know, the music that I write is also like a little eclectic. And so just, it would be nice to have more space for, yeah, like different types of music. Like, you know, commercial music is obviously there, but then it's very difficult for, you know, musicians on the fringe or like that are on the cutting edge to you know, kind of come into the scene as well. And yeah. I mean, I'm sure it might be different here in Berlin as well, but you know, like even I play in an Afro soul band in Vancouver, and just, you know, room for musicians of different minorities and or ethnicities and or different styles. Like, you know, for example, the group that I play in, we bring elements, for example, the guitar players from Morocco, the singers from Nigeria. So there's a lot of different elements coming into the music, and just, you know, having space for all of those things. Yeah. And just having like more of an open mind and appreciation for, yeah, like the whole gamut of music. Like I've played so many styles and throughout my life, and I appreciate so many different genres, except ska and punk. that, you know, like I have this perspective of like, you know, wanting there to be room for everything. And there's not always room for everything. And I feel, I hope that that changes. And I hope that, you know, that, you know, the people that are like supporting artists and musicians realize that, that, you know, the music will be more, how can I say, like, it'll be more like deep and like better quality and like more authentic and all those things. If there's like room for these, you know, influences to, you know, exist, to coexist and to, you know, collaborate and to, you know, meld together and things like that, if that makes sense. And yeah, I mean, there's also the whole Spotify issue, and that's also to do with what you said with like, you know, musicians not getting paid properly. So there's a lot of like that. Yeah.
And like also for maybe women to be allowed to play together.
Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, as I said, that's starting to happen more now. And yeah, like for example, another thing that's really amazing, you mentioned at the beginning that I'm a female bass player, and definitely when I was younger, that was definitely more of a like rare thing.
Yeah.
But there are so many female bass players and guitar players and drummers and things like coming up now. And it's like so great to see. Like it's almost like that novelty of, ooh, female bass player is kind of starting to wear away, because it's like everybody's like jumping on board now. And it's like, yeah, it's so great, because when I was younger, it was true. Like I was one of the only ones. And, but now there's so many. And it's nice to see that, like, you know, there's all these stereotypes that like women, women's roles in you know, in the ensemble, like for example, vocals. A lot of people say like, oh, you're a vocalist, or like, do you play, you know, it's like, well, no, I'm a bass player. Like, and so that stereotype towards women, and or even the other way around, like, you know, it can happen to men too. Like, you know, like men playing like, I don't know, like
e-guitar drums.
Yeah, like there's just these stereotypes that need to just like go away. And like, I think then people will be more comfortable to, yeah, just pick whatever instrument they wanted. Like, you know, I wasn't comfortable playing piano. It wasn't the instrument that I wanted to play. And maybe if like there wasn't that kind of stigma when I was much younger that like women or whatever are supposed to play piano or, you know, sing or do different things, that I would have just picked a different instrument at the outset. Like, yeah, just have the freedom to like play whatever you want. And obviously the whole gender equality thing still needs to come a little ways in the music industry, as it is in the rest of the world, I guess. Yeah. But yeah.
Cool. And what are your plans for the future? Do you have anything that is anything planned that's maybe that you don't know yet about, because it's not, because it's gonna fall into your lap, of course. But is there anything that you decided that you want to do in the future?
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to say what will come up for me next with these with things that, you know, whatever the universe transpires. But one thing that I would really like to do is I have a lot of songs that I have written and I would really love to record them. So that's sort of like a plan or like a goal of mine is I really want to focus on trying to get some of my songs recorded and out there into the world. Because, like I was saying before, it was like songwriting is such a special experience, and like getting to share who you are on the inside with everyone else. It's also a very vulnerable experience. And, you know, as an introvert, it's not easy for me to do that, but I guess it's probably not easy for anyone to do that really. But yeah, it's something that, that I shouldn't shy away from just because of that. And, you know, the world deserves more music and deserves to hear my music and what I have to say. And, so yeah, I hope to record some of my music in the near future. That would be really amazing.
And is there anything that I haven't asked that you would like to share with the listeners? If not, that's okay.
Maybe I will say, since I'm here, that I teach music as well. And I have in the past taught students from all over the world, like through online lessons. Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to, you know, take some lessons with me or connect with me, you know, there's possibilities to do that through the wonderful internet. Mm-hmm. And and obviously while I'm here in Berlin, if anyone wants to, as I said in that group, connect and play or talk about music, because obviously I'm a huge music geek and I will always enjoy talking about music. So
I loved it. It was a true delight since it was such a spontaneous thing. And I really enjoyed it. So thank you for your time that you came here to my place. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of your experience here in Berlin.
Thank you so much.